Mini-episode 1842 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1842. You have with you today two FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben, of course, our FDH Hoops analyst. And we have a little special treat for everybody today, all the Hoops fans out there. We were going to be coming back sometime mid-July-ish to do sort of a free agency recap, draft recap, and just kind of do a big roundup of the things that had happened since we last addressed you on draft night. But Ben's excellent idea was we need to do, I mean, the term emergency podcast gets way overused these days, but
yeah, I don't qualify this as an emergency, Rick.
Not exactly. But
a lot of stuff has happened.
A lot of it has. Yeah.
We have less chatted, so.
And waiting would not be right under the circumstances because there's a lot of big things to react to. And it strikes me in terms of this year, you and I were just talking off air and the thought popped into my head that it's one of those things where, and I think maybe this ties into, there's a column that we have in our, we still have our draft guide up on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, Pro Hoops Draftology 2025. There's a column in there that, again, and what we've been talking about on the show, that the transition in the NBA between the powers of the 2010s and right now, it's been a couple of years of transition, but the transition is fully done this year. In Oklahoma City, you have a team that is fully of this new era. Indiana in the finals, very much along those lines as well. The transition is over. And that now that it seems like things are kind of up for grabs, anytime you have this kind of revolution that happens, there's a lot of, you know, crockware that gets broken essentially here. It strikes me going back to February, we did a show that was a legitimate emergency podcast. When I awoke to a text from you that Luka Doncic had been traded for Anthony Davis, like, whoa. So it's like, it strikes me there was that. And then you got Mike Malone getting fired with a couple of games left in the season. Coach Taylor gets blown out of Memphis with a couple of games left in the season. Like, this has been a year of, like, big earth-shattering events. Like, if you were to look at, like, world news, this would be like 1989 or a year like that, where it just was just one big shock after another that kept coming. In the NBA, the first 48 to 72 hours of free agency, taking into account that, again, free agency and the unofficial tampering period before July 1st, whatever you want to call it. But leading up to the evening of July 2nd when we're taping this, this period has been consistent with what we've seen throughout the year. And I think it is just part of that whole thing of where teams are seeing opportunities out there as far as making moves, and that there's no, you know, giant overweening power that's lording over everybody else. I mean, Oklahoma City is the champions, but we saw that, again, throughout that, because of their youth, they were vulnerable all the way through the playoffs. So there is that. But everything that's coming in with the second apron, teams having to shed money, teams being willing to take on money to take a step up, chaos has been the theme of the year in 2025 in the NBA. So I guess it should be no surprise that the opening of free agency exemplified that perfectly.
Right. And obviously the biggest shock, Rick, was Milwaukee essentially waiving and stretching Damian Lillard's contract and then giving Miles Turner over $100 million, which I think for Turner is, again, he's coming into only being 30, so he's still in the prime of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very interesting move because they've retained a lot of their other players too. You know, they kept Torian Prince, they kept Kevin Porter Jr., they kept, you know, and then, you know, they also kept Gary Trent Jr. too. So they kept a lot of guys, but I don't think anyone had Lillard getting essentially stretched. I think the perception was, at least before this, that Milwaukee was just going to take this as kind of a mulligan year, maybe get another piece maybe, like, there were rumors they wanted to possibly trade for Cam Johnson. Ultimately, that ended up being Denver doing that deal for Michael Porter Jr. But we've discussed this too. The East right now is just a logjam of teams. Like, there's like six or seven teams that you could perceivably get into the NBA Finals. But it almost feels more like the cream of the crop right now, at least, is Cleveland and Orlando. Like, Orlando, honestly, Orlando essentially kicked it off with the Desmond Bane trade.
Yeah.
And right now, they also, in free agency, also made another very smart move to pick up. I don't know why my brain. So many free agency news, Rick.
I know. I'm scrolling down.
But essentially,
Tyus Jones.
And on a one-year deal for roughly $8 million, which, again, the one question we did have about them was, do they have a true point guard?
Yes.
And again, Tyus Jones, the stock on him has gone down in recent memory.
Sure.
Like, he's been a guy that has been very consistent in the league for the last couple of seasons. So
right.
They're building a very good team. And if one of the discussion points we have when the Bane trades, what we have was essentially – Orlando's in win now mode, and it feels like it's the right decision making that they're doing, because it's really hard considering, like, you know, again, if we just go through the top teams in the East, Milwaukee right now spent a lot of money on Miles Turner. The Knicks fired Tom Thibodeau and ended up hiring Mike Brown today and getting potentially getting Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
Cleveland is probably the best team right now. But we've seen they've had their own playoff struggles. And again, Atlanta has made some interesting moves. Detroit has made some interesting moves. So there's a lot of teams right now in the middle of the Eastern Conference. But it feels like there's not a lot of big competition among, like, you know, I don't think we're going to see a scenario where we're not going to see at least a combo of Cleveland or Orlando being in the Eastern Conference Finals with some other team or both together.
Yeah, and again, this past year, again, I kept saying the whole year, me being Chalky McChalkerson, it's going to be Boston and Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. So when I say it's going to be Cleveland and Orlando, again, I'm being Chalky Chalkerson saying that for next year. These things don't always play out that way. But on paper, you tell me who else is going to be in there. I agree with you on Atlanta. I think Atlanta is sort of in the on-deck circle. I think if one of those two stumbles, or in the case of the Cavs, as another injury epidemic in the playoffs, I think Atlanta is poised right there. Detroit feels like a little bit of a plexiglass candidate to me, that all things being equal, maybe you might look for them to take a little bit of a step backwards, but they continue to consolidate. They're continuing to move in the right direction. So, I mean, it's hard to say that. And again, you look at the landscape of the Eastern Conference, and it's getting easier and easier for teams like that. As Boston falls back, they won't be a serious contender next year. Indiana won't be. Milwaukee, I still think, is probably not. And what's interesting is we've got all these earth-shattering moves going on. But if you look at the team that is, I think, justifiably the favorite in the Eastern Conference, and again, easy for me to say, it's my hometown team, but the Cleveland Cavaliers, what's interesting is they've been characterized, as opposed to the other contenders in the league, they're doing things by and large that are not nearly as flashy right now. They're trying to address substance. I will say, too, that, again, you know, the media here locally is as stupid as you would expect, and the fan base and everything like that. With respect to, you know, Jim Ross and the whole Boomer Sooner thing that would, you know, always be out there whenever he would come in to do ringside announcing. I would refer to it as the Doomer Coomers here in Cleveland that are always just beating the drum about, oh, you can't win with the core four in the playoffs. And so all those people have crawled out from underneath the rock. They'd gone away when the team had won 64 games. But what they're looking to do, they're keeping the core of the team together, making moves around the margins here. It was interesting that it looks like it was a zero-sum game choice between Sam Merrill ultimately, and whether or not they were going to do that or keep, Ty there as the backup point guard. And so he ends up going to Memphis. And that's a move where, again, that's getting debated an awful lot in terms of whether or not you want to keep Jerome here in that role. The team traded for Lonzo Ball. So that kind of showed you that they were addressing the backup point guard situation in that way, offloaded Isaac Okoro's contract at the same time, which was an unmitigated blessing, and a very quiet move, something that I guarantee you nobody is spending much time talking about on any of the hot takes shows on ESPN. But bringing back Larry Nance Jr., this team spent all of last year looking in vain for somebody that could come in and fill minutes at the four and five spots here. I mean, such that Tristan Thompson once in a while out of desperation was getting those minutes. And again, is Larry Nance Jr. Nessa, I mean, all things being equal, maybe you look for somebody that's kind of an enforcer in that role, somebody to be a tough guy, because this is a team that doesn't really have much of that. Max Strus can be a very good irritator, but no real tough guys here. Larry Nance Jr. is not going to give you that, but he's going to give you quality minutes in a spot that this team quietly has needed help in for the last year, year and a half. So that's going to be something right there. Like I said, is that a move that's going to spill any beer down at the VFW halls anywhere outside of Cleveland? No. But it's going to be interesting and I think potentially impactful.
Right. And again, like the biggest beneficiary of Indiana and Boston having two major ACL injuries is probably going to be Cleveland, because they were the top seed in the East. And getting a guy like, and again, we all know Lonzo Ball has had injury issues. He's only played 60 games combined in his last three seasons. Yeah. But he's one of those interesting guys. And you saw in the playoffs when Cleveland lost in five to Indiana that they really had issues guarding Tyrese Haliburton. And even if Lonzo Ball isn't the greatest defender in the world, he's still a plus defender. He can match up well. And one thing that you did see in the Indiana series that Cleveland did run into a lot is that while Garland and Mitchell are great scorers and great creators on themselves, Lonzo Ball's an old school prototypical distribute the ball point guard. And that was something that you could see at times when either, you know, when Garland was a little, had his foot problems, and then Mitchell had his ankle issues at periods of time during the season. It feels like that's a move to shore up that area. And again, too, we all know the Cavs are going to go over the second apron anyway, just based on the total amount of money on the board. So they had the
unavoidable
between Merrill and Jerome. And I feel like when Ball became available, it made their decision a lot easier because, well, I think Ty Jerome is a great player. He didn't exactly have the greatest playoffs, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it feels like to me, and again, like you noted too, it's like I think Isaac Okoro is a very interesting trade piece there because he is still very young. He still has shown improvement with his three-point shot, but feels a lot like the same in Chicago. Like they already have a guy like Patrick Williams who still hasn't reached his full potential yet. So
sure.
And the thing that made the Ball deal just interesting to me is like it's not often you get a one-for-one trade and the guy you're getting in return has a team option for his next year, because essentially I then rule it, and I think a lot of NBA heads have even mentioned this too. It's like it's a clear win for Cleveland because all they have to do at this moment is like if he plays well, we retain him for that money. If not, we let him go, we save $10 million off the cap, and then we try and figure out another way.
Yeah, that deal expiring before Okoro's deal, like you said, that is important. And the whole thing, too, and like I said, checking out some of the doomer takes in the media around town here, all of the, trademark unsophisticated takes that you're going to find out there. And like, what is Sam Merrill, what does he do compared to what Ty Jerome gives you? And by the way, and I'm not advocating letting Jerome go. I mean, I think that's a tough call either way. I don't really feel very strongly either way on that. But like Sam Merrill, the one thing he gives you is he's a pure shooter. I mean, that's what is one of the most important things in the league today is outside shooting, being a shooter. And he can be a little streaky at times, yes, but he's a pretty pure shooter. I mean, and the irony is, like, the way that he – if the historical irony in terms of the history of the Cavs, if you look at it here, is that who does he remind you of if you're a longtime Cavs fan? Is, I would say, probably Del Curry in the late 80s, who was kind of that sharpshooter specialist who ended up going to Charlotte in the expansion draft. And then, of course, his son comes back to be a thorn in our side 30-some years later. But that's the thing where having a guy like that, there's just been a lot of piling on Sam Merrill for that contract. And it's like you're completely missing the fact that what he gives you is one of the most important facets in today's league. Like it or not, people may not like the whole, thing of, pace and space and all the emphasis on threes, but it's there. You don't have to like it, but you have to acknowledge it. Sam Merrill does that, and he's been a guy who's continuing to improve defensively. He'll never be a stopper, but he's continued to improve. He is certainly not a liability at this point in time. And by the way, too, when you look at Ball's health, two guys that are going to be very, very important. I think they're going to start the year outside the rotation, but Craig Porter Jr. and also Jalen Tyson. I think they're going to be getting a lot more minutes next year. And I think you may see Tyson, and I haven't seen yet if he'll be playing summer league or not, but potentially being at the point of being a primary ball handler. I think they're going to want to see what they have with him there and see if he can take that on as well. He's already a guy that's kind of a Swiss Army knife for this team. Whenever he comes off the bench, gives you a lot of different things. Not a pure shooter yet. If he ever becomes that, and I don't know if he ever will, he'll be a star. But he gives you a lot of those things around the margins, sort of. So the Cavs have a couple of options, at least for the regular season, if Ball goes down before Garland comes back, or if they need a backup once Garland comes back. Would they be a little queasy going into next year's playoffs with either of these guys as the primary backup? Yes, but we're not there yet. You play 82 games before we get to that point.
I mean, if we're speaking about shooting too, just to like move to other notable players, Luke Kennard went to Atlanta with another.
Yeah.
So we're moving Nikhil Alexander-Walker, moved from Minnesota. And I know you mentioned Charlotte too, Rick. They have their new GM, I'm blanking on his name right now, but okay. He has been also very busy in this offseason, essentially with the Colin Sexton trade, picking up Mason Plumlee and Spencer Dinwiddie to kind of shore up that bench right now. So, again, there's a lot of teams right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jeff Peterson, excuse me.
Jeff Peterson, I was just going to say.
He's done a very good job, drafted very well, and I can't believe I'm putting these words on ice, Rick. The Charlotte Hornets might be a sleeper team in the Eastern Conference if they can figure it out. If that roster, because we saw, you know, if they stay healthy, and I personally think Charles Lee is probably one of the more underrated head coaches in the NBA today.
He might be.
He could have it on this. If this team can have some shot creation and can play sort of that Celtic style of basketball.
Yeah,
they're a very interesting team. Same thing with Atlanta. Both of those teams right now, we're kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Both of them right now are very intriguing in terms of teams that could make the playoffs in the Eastern.
Well, you look at the additions that they made, and none of these guys are star-level guys, really, at least at this point. But Colin Sexton having the 1 year with the Cavs, 21-22, when the Cavs made a leap up to the play-in game that people hadn't really seen coming ahead of time. Pat Connaughton has a history of winning in his career. And Spencer Dinwiddie, you go back to when he was with the Nets, he was a part of those Nets teams that so overachieved that they ended up being a magnet for Kyrie and Durant, which ironically ended up being the worst thing that ever happened to them. But that's another story for another day. So you've got guys there that have been part of winning situations to some degree in the past. And you get Trey Mann coming in. So, yeah, I mean, it's a situation where Charlotte really, and again, you know, doing well in the draft, you know, as we talked about as well. So, yeah, I mean, they're a team
they
where
stay healthy. That's the most important thing for them. If LaMelo Ball can stay healthy, this is a team that can clearly get into the play-in tournament potentially.
Yeah.
To that 6-7-8 spot.
I mean, you know, and I would have completely ruled out before this offseason that they would be a contender for the play-in tournament next year, but you can't rule it out anymore. You know, some of that's due to the landscape of the Eastern Conference. And again, the things that have continued to happen in free agency and in the trade market. And, you know, we talked about this again as well, that, you know, Boston was one of the earlier movers in this thing here with offloading Porzingis, offloading Holiday. That's a thing where, again, I'm a little bit embittered as a longtime Boston hater in all sports that they end up getting back a player the caliber of Simons from Portland. So that's somebody that they're going to be able to build around subsequently here as well. So
right. And the big thing for them too is there's also discussions that he's either going to lead them as like the first or second option, or they may move his salary to try and get someone else with that.
Yeah.
So, and another thing too, like Luke Kornet also went to San Antonio, and I know we'll talk about the West, but
sure.
That's another key rotation guy that Boston lost because of the second apron. So what we've all been discussing and what we like, we're talking about 1 year ago in the news regarding the second apron and the new CBA, these are where all these moves start to occur and why it pays to have a lot of these guys locked into cheap level contracts. When you can't, because you're going to lose them if you don't.
Sure, yeah. I mean, well, you talked about Detroit a little bit earlier as a team that could make a step up. They lose Tim Hardaway Jr. On the other hand, they bring in not only Caris LeVert but also Duncan Robinson. So they've got two guys that have had some success in the past. Caris LeVert, another one of these guys from Brooklyn, when that was a team that was a surprise come-up team a number of years ago. I mean, I joked with you off-air about that with LeVert, that he must have some degree that JB's going to be a little more consistent with his usage this time around. But, you know, Detroit is definitely a situation where, again, Trajan Langdon has kind of – these have been kind of the moves that he's made since he's got there. It's kind of working around the margins of the situation there. Counting on improvement from within, which they ended up having last year. Cade Cunningham really making the leap to super-duper stardom. And again, the young players on that roster getting better, and then the moves that he has made to sort of augment that. So Detroit is one of those situations, much like Atlanta, much like Orlando. I think they're behind those two, clearly, but a young team that's saying, hey, we need to start making steps to move up right now.
Right. And I think the big thing for them too, Rick, is that, and you have to give Trajan Langdon credit here, which is when you've been in a situation with a team that was just, Detroit was down for 2 or 3 years, and they just looked awful at periods of time. And it was clear, like, they just did not have totality great three-point shooting. And clearly they've addressed that issue. And I think sometimes the toughest thing for NBA GMs to do is to make these along the margins moves. And right. You have to do it to build great rosters. And again, they might have lucked out with the whole Malik Beasley situation and how that's currently playing out. Obviously, we won't go into that much until there's actual proof or until something else has occurred. But
sure.
There again, like I said, they're on one of those short lists of teams. And it wouldn't shock me to see also a team like Brooklyn potentially with some of the moves they made in acquiring Michael Porter Jr. from Denver, that they could be an interesting team to maybe sneak into the play-in potentially.
It wouldn't surprise me because, again, we've talked about this before that, again, Jordy Fernandez is a coach that, again, is going to get the most out of the roster that he has to the detriment of the rebuild that they're clearly in. I mean, you're never going to draft high enough if you keep winning games that you don't really want to win organizationally. But, yeah, that's a thing where – and I didn't look to see all the different considerations here, but the whole deal of them shipping out Cam Johnson, who was basically the prize pig that they had, you know, to try to extract value here, and end up getting back Michael Porter Jr. when they're a team that's building for the future. And again, that guy with his health, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, basically everything that he has accomplished has sort of been on basically bonus time. Because as I understand it, he has been battling through essentially some form of drop foot, which at one point was a career ender. I think it was a career ender for Jay Williams when he'd been through his motorcycle accident. So we've reached the point where like technology can get you out there to a certain point, but like it seems like every year you get out of Michael Porter Jr. is sort of a bonus. And he's not a young puppy anymore either to where he's going to be there for when this team gets to be really good. So that kind of a deal. I know they got some future considerations and other things in the deal here, but that was not the shape of the deal that I was necessarily expecting. Although I guess you have to make the salaries work out and that kind of stuff when you make
it. And again, for the Nets, you're still getting, I would say, a comparable player. Like they're, I would say, sure. Put just their raw numbers across the board. They're essentially not the same guy, but they're relatively close.
Sure.
And again, I mean, if we're talking about a team that's so far won free agency, we got to talk about the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
They made, again, moves around the edges, get Tim Hardaway. They got Jonas Valanciunas from Sacramento. Like, they got Bruce Brown back also as well. So they are, remember, this is a team that took Oklahoma City to 7 games and had a very good chance to have beaten them in the second round. And their bench is much more fortified now. They have a lot higher caliber bench guys. So you considering all the just chaos that Nuggets team was going through, you know, let's just be honest at this point. You got to give credit to, you know, Ben Tenzer and that whole team there of that. These are very worthy moves to get you back into contention, because we saw what happened. They just essentially, after Aaron Gordon got injured in Game 6, they just ran out of gas, essentially.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen to the team that they're going to put on the floor next year. Yes, they have been one of the biggest winners here in the free agency / trading period. They have been going very, very, very strong. Yeah, the Western Conference is where, to be honest, most of the marquee moves have happened, because that's where the Lions' share of the true powers in the league lie at this point here. The fact that we're saying sort of Cleveland and Orlando more or less by default right now, co-favorites in Eastern Conference, probably in that order. Boy, the Western Conference is a different story because the depth that's out there, Houston, really, I mean, if we're saying Denver's the biggest winner, then at least in the near term, which is what they're going for, Houston's got to be right on their heels there. Not only with the Durant acquisition, but you bring in Clint Capella to that front court as well. That gives you a lot of different, interesting, different combinations to play with here. Dorian Finney-Smith coming over from the Lakers. All the guys that they ended up retaining, Adams, Holiday, Green, Smith Jr., Tate, Van Vliet. I mean, they've had exactly the kind of offseason that they wanted to have because, again, we talked about this previously that, like, before they did anything, you talk about the clearest plexiglass candidate that there was in the league. It was them. Somehow or another, they got the two seed. We saw in the playoffs, they weren't really a two seed. Those teams were just really kind of bunched up. It's kind of like lies, damn lies, and statistics that they were the two seed. But they're a team where, to their credit, they saw that. We're not as good as the two seed would indicate, but boy, they would be as good as that next year coming in. They made all the right moves so far.
Right, and I think if they're trying to dethrone Oklahoma City at this point, that is arguably the team you want to do. They've got a lot of size and length. Amen Thompson's going to have another year under his belt. And they definitely, with some of these decisions, and you're going to, again, free agency isn't over. Trades can still be made. Would not be surprised to see some other moves along the edges for Houston. But it feels like they're setting themselves up to be, essentially, if it's not Denver, it's going to be Houston as the chief competition for the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and indicative also, the way that Houston is building that roster, the other thing that we've been talking about here, as far as not just the turnover basically from the 2010s to now, is basically complete. And we're in this new era and you have the new powers that are at the top. But also, as we saw in the regular season with the top seeds in each conference, Oklahoma City and Cleveland, and the teams in the finals, Oklahoma City and Indiana, depth being, you know, basically the new hotness, as we said in our draft guide. This is a thing where, again, I rattled off right there with Houston, nine different names, and probably only Green and maybe Tate out of those names wouldn't be in the rotation. So you're looking at seven names right there for offseason transactions that are going to be in the rotation for next year. So the only thing is, with a team like Houston, going as far as they've gone, getting as much depth as they've gotten, I wonder if it's a thing. I think at least the first part of the season, you may see a little bit of shaking out as far as establishing the hierarchy of the team, what the different options are, who's the first, second, third, fourth option with the different combinations here. We haven't even mentioned Sengun, who's the second best player on the team behind Durant. And I would argue, as a Sengun guy, closer on the one and two than most people would say, given where Durant's at in this stage of his career. So as far as what the chemistry looks like with this team, it may take them a while to get there. But again, as I said with the Cavs, you go through the 82 games, you get into the playoffs. Both with the Cavs and with Houston, I would expect them to have things figured out.
Right, and the one benefit, like, to give Oklahoma City some boost is that now, since they have won a ring, they have now the ability to fall back on that championship experience.
That's right.
But I will note for their sake, it is not great news that now you have not one, but two teams now trying to vie for that crown in your favor. So,
right.
This feels to me like OKC is the leader in the clubhouse. I don't think anyone's going to debate that at this point.
Right.
But it is going to be yet another, I feel like they're going to have at least one or two seven-game series again. And we all know the rule. When you get to a seven-game series, they turn into 50-50 coin flips. So when that occurs, yeah, you have to make sure you still win. But again, it's very interesting, Rick. In the Eastern Conference, for the free agency, we saw some like wholesale changes a lot of these teams remaining.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Western Conference, it's a little bit more around the edges. If you remove Houston, you remove Memphis, you remove Phoenix. It's very small moves. Like, you know, the Clippers got Brook Lopez. The Lakers got DeAndre Ayton, which is about, well, I was reported about 2 hours ago before we started recording. So it's almost like all these Western Conference teams kind of stood pat. They're, mm-hmm. you know, We'll also know, like,
some did, yeah.
it feels like a lot of them just kind of, you know, retained everyone. Like, again, a team that we didn't really, we talked about more during the playoff shows, but Minnesota essentially were able to keep Randall and Reed, which, right, again, was big for their core and big for a core that got back to another Western Conference Finals. So it's going to be interesting to see if they try and use a little bit more Rob Dillingham at point with losing Nikhil Alexander Walker. I know they're not exactly the same player, but I feel like this is going to be Dillingham taking a fair amount of his minutes just to, on the offensive side of the ball for Minnesota.
You would think so. And as far as it goes with Oklahoma City as well, again, the monster 4-year supermax extension to SGA. And I'll tell you what, an unbelievable re-signing after the NBA Finals here and after all the great production that he had. They get back Jalen Williams, 3 years, $24 million. Oh, wait a minute, I'm being handed a note here. I'm sorry, wrong Jalen Williams. Okay.
We have fun on the show, as we all
do. Yeah, we do. We do, yes. But, yeah, I mean, they lose Dillon Jones in a trade with the Wizards. But, again, this is – They're anything that they're losing at this point, they're going to be able to basically, you know, fill in the blanks on basically kind of from within, from what they did in the draft, et cetera. So Oklahoma City, notwithstanding the financial pressures that are going to be coming their way, right, and with the, as we talked about before, the amount of depth that they had and their ability to promote other guys into the rotation, they're a team. Much like I mentioned a couple of names with the Cavs that will be end up being rotation players when there are injuries. Oklahoma City's got the same. They've got guys that when they need to dip into that reserve beyond the 10 guys, they can do that. So Oklahoma City is going to be just fine in that regard. But one of the things that's always going to get the most attention in the Western Conference or anywhere is what's going on with the Lakers, with LeBron being there. So the whole thing of like Rich Paul let it be known the other day with the whole, you know, passive aggressive kind of thing here. They're like, oh, well, LeBron's not necessarily happy with the lack of urgency here, which again, they end up going out and getting DeAndre Ayton. As I said to you, you know, as I texted you when you texted me the news, you know, fake shocked face, you know, at that move here, that like we all knew that if Ayton was there on the buyout market, that that would be something where the Lakers would be there to snatch him up. So, again, you almost kind of wonder, I mean, had they had him in the playoffs last year, you think back to it because they didn't get Mark Williams, that deal with Charlotte fell apart because of the health concerns. But the Lakers had a very, very big vulnerability in the pivot last year, in the second half of the season in particular, that won't be there next year. They lose Dorian Finney-Smith. They're still a pretty top-heavy team. They're still a team without much of a bench, which is a concern when you've got a LeBron James who is going to be turning 41 at about the midpoint of the season here, or a little before the midpoint of the season. So that's a situation that the Lakers are going to have to deal with here. But, I mean, they seem like they're still firmly in the top six with getting Ayton in there. And the fact that, again, they might be top-heavy, but if you've got LeBron, even at this stage of his career, and Luka in there, thanks, Nico, that's still a thing where, again, the Lakers still clearly look like a top six team.
Right, and a team that we've sort of shaded around, but we haven't also talked about a lot, is Memphis right now. Obviously, getting Ty Jerome, re-signing Jaren Jackson to over a $248 million contract. I think you know my personal thoughts on how much money Jaren Jackson gets paid to play basketball.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, they're still a very young team. Also got to keep Salty Aldama. Let's just be honest, Rick. They had to make moves in free agency. They're going to get Cedric Coward, their rookie that they got from Portland. It feels like, to me, they're the biggest question mark in the Western Conference. Because they still have, if you remove Desmond Bane, they still have the core of that team that we all really saw shock the world as a two-seed for a while there. But, again, they're the biggest team. They could be a team, in my opinion, in the Western Conference. They could either be a top six seed or they could be out of the playoffs entirely. And the Lakers are one of the, to go back to the Lakers, they're within that same sort of mix because I kind of feel like, you know, if you run into injury problems, I know Luka slimmed down in the offseason and they're going to fortify the bench even more. But it does feel like they're, and again, I would say the Clippers are also an interesting scenario. They retain James Harden on a more friendly deal, but those are sort of the three teams in the Western Conference that we just, based off of what we saw from last year, we just don't know a lot about. And they kind of feel like they've stood pat so far. So it's tough for me to see that they're going to jump into that top three conversation at this time.
Well, I mean, Memphis, you talk about a schizophrenic offseason. I mean, I think we've seen the quickest taking a knee period in the history of the NBA. Because you go to trade away Bane and you get like the four picks, which, you know, I said at the time, two things can be true at once. Big overpaid by Orlando, but, I mean, he filled one of their most glaring needs there. And the fact that they've also rounded out, you know, the point guard situation there. I mean, Orlando did what they needed to do, as difficult as it was. It just makes, again, the Luka deal to L.A. that much more ludicrous when Bane is bringing back four number ones. But it's a situation where it looked like they were in for a rebuild, but then they re-signed Jaren Jackson Jr. And prior to that, you mentioned Cedric Coward, like a guy that if he pans out, projects to be kind of like, guess who, maybe Desmond Bane, as far as what they're talking about in terms of skill set, a guy who could step right into that spot. So you get a younger, cheaper version, potentially, of the same guy, plus four number ones, plus, again, in the deal there, Cole Anthony, KCP, you know, beefing up the bench, Ty Jerome beefing up the bench. I mean, Memphis is going to have a deeper bench than they had a year ago, and basically, again, this is a team where, again, it looked like they move Bane, and it's like, okay, here we go. We're blowing it all up. And they come into the next year arguably in a better position than they were this past year when they made the playoffs. So, yeah. Now, again, they've been a team where they've been up and down based on the health and availability of their players, both of which I think will continue to be concerns, I think, for Ja Morant. And again, is that the guy you build around? I have my doubts. I mean, they might be better off.
The question you also have to ask, too, is they just gave Jaren Jackson all his money, and then he apparently had an injury off-site recently. So that's also a question, too. And again, too, the question ultimately, again, we saw their bench last year was actually pretty good when it was really good. Scottie Pippen Jr. definitely showed up in that five-game series with OKC. But,
right,
again, like we see how sometimes, and this is why I have to note this for, like, anyone in like Oklahoma City talking about dynasty, like we've seen very quickly championship windows close in this version of the parody NBA. And sure, they have the best chance, but we were talking about Denver being a dynasty, and right now we're not even sure if they're going to win their second at this point. Yeah. So when we're in a parody sort of situation, I don't think you can have total dynasty talks. But it was a good thing OKC was also able to lock up Shea. We all know that the two big contracts coming up, Rick, are going to be the other Jalen Williams and Shell. Mm-hmm. And when those contracts come through, the real question is how Sam Presti, their GM, is going to essentially structure those. Or does he feel like if Holmgren, because Holmgren missed a major portion of the season with a hip injury, will they decide to do what they did with James Harden and spin him off for potential assets down the line to find another guy who can either be similar to him or at least be a healthier version of Chet?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, guys who can develop into what Chet Holmgren, who is still, you know, on the upward plane of his career, can develop into, don't exactly grow on trees. And that's one of those things where, again, you look at in the regular season, do they have a lot of success without him? Yes. But even with him in the playoffs, again, Indiana takes him to game seven. You and I said at the time, we'll never know what would have happened if Halliburton had stayed healthy. I mean, just running off the fumes of Halliburton being in there, the Pacers were up 1 point at halftime. I mean, they fell apart in the second half sort of unsurprisingly. But, I mean, Oklahoma City won the title by a hair with him. So I wouldn't get too cocky about, I don't know if we need Chet Holmgren anymore. I don't think they're going to be dumb enough to take that approach. But that's a thing where, yeah, I mean, if they went to put him on the trade market, he would fetch an awful lot. But then that becomes, do you make the salaries be able to match up with what you have there? I mean, if Oklahoma City ends up trading for somebody on a first contract, then that's a less experienced player. So there's a lot of considerations that would come in. I think it would be pretty hard to spin him off.
I would tend to agree as well. I think the big question also, too, is that just with the second apron, and essentially you're paying Shea the highest extension in NBA history.
Yep.
A lot of that money is going to get tied up, and you're going to have to start making really tough decisions. We saw what happened to Boston in the offseason. Cleveland's over the second apron. We're going to see a handful of teams over the second apron in the next year and two. have to make some very tough decisions in terms of depth because they're just going to have to. Because it's just really hampered by the second apron overall.
Yeah, that's what it's coming into. And as far as a team that, again, notwithstanding the karma that the franchise has justifiably earned, but they might be a top six team in the West next year and at minimum should be in the play-in tournament, Dallas. They've had a very lucky offseason, certainly being able to get the top pick and get Cooper Flagg in there. But, you know, beyond that, they get D'Angelo Russell to fill in at point guard until such time as Kyrie is back in there. You may or may not see Kyrie back towards the end of the year. And that's a thing where that really helps. They get Exum back in there who's been a good role player for them. And the funny thing is that, like, this is one of those weird things, but, I mean, Dallas, it's sort of contradictory in the sense that they really shortened their window by bringing in Anthony Davis and getting rid of Luka. They shortened their window to really the next couple of, you know, two, three seasons, maybe four, but probably not even that. They're going to lose this season as far as being a legitimate championship contender because of not having Kyrie in there. But it's like, as far as being able to contend for the next couple seasons, the rest of their window, you almost wonder if that knee injury, assuming that it's not one that robs him of, you know, even more of, you know, what his capabilities are, might not be the worst thing in the world for them because he was coming into free agency with a good amount of leverage. The only offset to that, as you and I have talked about this in the past, it is the golden age of point guards in the NBA, such that when the Cavs, who they probably were shopping Darius Garland last offseason, but most teams, and,
I mean,
and Darius Garland
this offseason too, Rick, at least based on the rumors I saw.
They got a call from Phoenix. I don't think they did anything, but that's where they got a call from Phoenix on Durant. But it's a thing where moving point guards is kind of hard right now because there's so many good and great ones out there. But, like, Kyrie would have had him by the short hairs after the Luka trade if he was healthy. So it's like you never want to say it's a good thing for a team to miss having a year of Kyrie Irving, but it probably made him more likely to re-up with them than he would have been otherwise because for all the talk that, like, okay, well, he's now reached the maturity phase of his career. I mean, he's flaked out on teams in the past, three teams that I can count. So for Dallas, that was a little bit of an insurance policy, at least having him hurt, because it's like, well, okay, now the guy really doesn't have any place else to go.
And, I mean, the real thing for them, too, is they're going to be one of the more interesting teams with Cooper Flagg because we all talked about the hype of him going into the draft, and we're going to get to see it. And, again, the one big point that I made in a previous episode was this is going to be arguably the best situation for Cooper Flagg because he's not going to have to run into these bad habits of, like, having to do it all or essentially having to put the team on his back night to night. So he's going to be allowed to play hit the best version of his game early on in the NBA. And again, even if they didn't get Cooper Flagg, Rick, if you look at this team, it's still has very good pieces. Like, even though they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Right.
You still got PJ Washington. You still got Derek Lively. You got Jalen Hardy, who some people see as a net negative. I like to see him as a net positive just in terms of scoring. They have still a very interesting roster, but with Flagg on top of it too, again, you know, obviously there's some other teams like we haven't even mentioned San Antonio really in this podcast at all, but it feels like, in this episode at all. It's sort of interesting that almost like heading into the 2025-2026 season, it kind of feels like 2011-2012 all over again with the Western Conference being led by the teams in sort of that Texas triangle, OKC triangle.
Yeah.
And then in the Eastern Conference, it's Orlando and Cleveland all over again. So
it is.
Everything old is new and everything old is new again. So, but again, Dallas is just going to be a very interesting watch. If they have some things go their way, Rick, I would not rule them out as a team that could shockingly make a conference finals. Because if Flagg is who we think he's going to be, and Anthony Davis stays healthy, you still got Klay Thompson, you still got D'Angelo Russell, you still got a good young nucleus of guys who know how to score the basketball, I would not rule out a Western Conference final appearance for them. Now, obviously, I don't think they're going to the finals, but I would not rule them out, especially if everything goes their way. And we've seen very similar to what happened to Boston and Indiana in the last two playoff runs for them in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
If Shea gets injured, if Durant squabbles in Houston, or you know, if Denver, if Jokic goes down with a major injury, any of these teams ahead of them are vulnerable. So as long as you stay healthy in the NBA and get to the playoffs, they're still a very tough out, especially if Flagg turns out who we think he's going to be.
In the scenario you're suggesting, is Kyrie back by the end of the season and able to play in the playoffs? I would think so if they're going to the West Finals.
A little bit of both, because I would not totally rule out, because, again, I'm thinking a lot has to happen, Rick, but I would not rule out that.
But that's one of those things I would think.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, like, would it help? Yeah. Of course. But I would also say, they have a good enough, deep enough roster that if Davis is healthy and if we're thinking that Cooper Flagg is a future top 75 player in today's NBA, I can't rule them out in the Western Conference, because if they get a decent matchup, or if a handful of these teams in the West get injured, they're right there. They have the talent. They're literally only 1 year off of an NBA Finals appearance. So
yeah, they kind of came in the back door last year too.
Yeah, and I can't fully say that they're done. So they have a very good opportunity, and it's going to be, I would say they are, in my opinion, the biggest boom-bust team in the NBA. They could be a team that could get to a conference finals if everything goes their way, or they could be in a rough part if AD gets injured and Flagg is asked to pretty much do it all in the interim. So,
yeah, they would very well be.
If I'm a Dallas fan at the end of the day, you know, considering all the Luka trade happened and everything that surrounded that, they're in a very solid position in the Western Conference right now.
Sure. And you've made this point before, and this is an excellent point. We can't get back to this point enough. As far as Cooper Flagg landing on a team where, again, it's not all him. Anthony Davis is going to be the best player on the team for at least some period of time, and where you have the support around you with Kyrie when he's back, Klay Thompson, like you said, some of these other players. Landing in a situation like that, because – and we're not just talking about standard issue number one picks overall – but we've talked about it before. That guy that might be out there once every couple of years. Victor Wembanyama is a guy that, like, was never been out there before. But, like, him, Cade Cunningham in 21, Anthony Davis in 2012. The guy where it's like, that's the guy that everybody's been looking at for the last couple of years to be the number one guy overall. Cooper Flagg being that guy, landing on a team where he doesn't have to shoulder the burden of that. It brings me to a statistic that I read a little bit earlier, which is very eye-popping indeed. And I'm wondering if you can guess the number on this one here. With DeAndre Ayton signing with the Lakers, he being a number one pick overall, how many players over the course of his career has LeBron played with that have been number one picks overall?
Ooh, I'm trying to think overall in the top of my head.
Kyrie was one of them. We know Kyrie.
Yeah,
but
we know Kyrie. He played with Shaq, so that's two.
There's some that are a little more obscure.
Yeah, there's some. I'm going to say five off the top.
DeAndre Ayton is the ninth number one overall pick that LeBron has played with. Now, some were guys that were like role players. He played with Joe Smith, who, I mean, it's, by the way, I mean, you talk about one of the great what-ifs in NBA history. Like, when Joe Smith lost his knees, like, that's one of the big what-ifs. Because it's like, man, when that guy, you know.
Well, the other thing, Rick, with Joe Smith is the handshake agreement. Notice fortunes as well. So
yes, that's what he's best known for is that whole deal. But yeah, so it's one of those things where LeBron has and that's the funny thing. A lot of them have been kind of role player type guys in that role by the time they've made it to LeBron's team. DeAndre Ayton, not so much. I mean, he's not a star, but he's a solid contributing piece that the Lakers really need. So yeah, so in looking at this again, it has been an incredibly impactful first couple of days of free agency here. And so do you have any other thoughts on what we've seen thus far with free agency and trades? Because like I said before, it's just been a series of earthquakes.
I mean, at this point too, there's still a handful of guys right now still out there as of this taping. I know Russell Westbrook is still available. Malcolm Brogdon's still available.
Chris Paul.
I think the one guy that everyone's wondering what's going to happen with him is Jonathan Kuminga in Golden State. Guy right now that the domino has not fallen for him yet, if he's retained there, if he goes somewhere else. And again, like, there's still a lot of guys around the edges that are probably going to get NBA contracts in the next couple of days. But
yeah,
it feels like at least for now, all the major free agency decisions are essentially at this point done. And again, another guy if we're just talking point guards, Chris Paul is also still available. There's a huge debate. He may be going to Phoenix. There's discussions with Milwaukee. There's other teams that definitely need a point guard of his caliber. And it's going to be very interesting to see sort of like we've gone through like the first two tiers right now of the free agents.
Yeah.
And now we're getting to the bottom third where it gets very interesting in terms of some of these like guys who are going to be role players in the league, where they end up essentially.
Well, and if we get beyond the ones that can make an immediate contribution in the 25-26 season, going back a number of years now to when Kevin Durant hit the free agency market coming off of his very bad injury in the NBA Finals, very rarely is a player out there on the market where they can command teams to be like, you know what you're going to do? You're going to pay me to rehab this year, and then you're going to have me for the years afterwards. We saw it with Kevin Durant then. We see it with Lillard now that he's on the market. Lillard is at the level where he can command that. So I've seen some speculation articles about where he may end up. And again, one of the things working against him, we say it again, golden era of point guards in the NBA. So it's a situation where what are the number of teams out there that really need somebody in that situation? I mean, you can count them on one hand and you might have a few fingers left over. But as far as where he might just be a very good fit overall, I mean, the name out there that's pretty obvious, although I don't think he lines up on their timeline, is Miami. He'd been itching to get to Miami earlier. Boy, oh boy, could they use him. But it's like by the time he gets back with what he's going to have left in the tank, with what their timeline is to contend again, because we saw it in the playoffs this year, that first round series against the Cavs. I mean, the difference, you know, because everybody kept saying, oh, Miami flips the switch when they get to the playoffs. Yeah, that was in the Jimmy Butler era. I mean, we've seen the post-Butler Heat, and the ceiling is way lower. They just lost Duncan Robinson, so they're retrenching right now. Look, they may still make the play-in next year. We may not notice much difference. They may make the play-in, but it's like they seem to be the most obvious team for Lillard, but I don't know that would end up to their satisfaction or his.
Right, and it feels like to me, like you said, there's not a lot of other candidates, at least right now. Obviously, yeah. Phoenix is one on there right now. I know the Lakers were also in being discussed. Mm-hmm. I would also not rule out another LA team. The Clippers could be interested in his services as well to maybe take some pressure off of James Harden for having to handle the ball on the way up the court every mm-hmm. day. So
okay.
But again, and I'll note this too, since he's also going to be gone for a full season, there could be a sleeper team we don't even know, Rick, at this point.
Sure.
That might go after him just with the knowledge of like, hey, if we can build sort of a 2+1 scenario where we have our two best players and Dame's essentially our third best player.
Sure.
He definitely, at this point of his career, can still shoot the basketball among the best in the NBA from three. So
yeah.
If you still have a guy like that on the floor, he changes the complex of the game. So it's going to be very interesting where he ends up ultimately.
The irony of ironies is one of the places that I have seen listed is Portland, but it's like they're not a year away from being a viable team that he could come back to help take them to another level. You know what I mean? Like their right. Their
it
timeline,
seem like a likelihood, but again,
no.
It's going to be a very interesting scenario. And again, too, we've heard a lot of noise also too in terms of how the whole Bucks situation was handled and
right
all these other scenarios too. So
it's, yeah.
Again, like it feels like the story after this first wave is where are all these top five point guards going to go?
Right.
At the end of the day, like the aging point guard class of Westbrook, Paul, Lillard, where are they going to end up in the next year and a half?
True, yeah. And well, here's the thing too. I have a question all of a sudden here. Like, sure. Is it legal under the CBA? Like if he signed a vet minimum deal with say the Bucks, could he collect his fat paycheck and a vet minimum paycheck from the Bucks? That would be interesting. Yeah, that's
the
right.
You're not, that is no.
Yeah, that's right. You're not allowed to go back to the team. Okay, that's right. They didn't pass a rule on that because that was when the Cavs were doing that whole thing back in the day. Like, we're going to cut you, but we're going to bring you back. Yeah, I think they closed.
Maybe That's all we
did. Yeah. Yeah. They closed that loophole. That would have been funny.
Now, tell all the kids out there, search Joe Smith contract. You'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And while you're at it, go on YouTube, look at his college highlights. Like before that guy lost his knees. Oh my goodness. I mean, that's one of the what ifs of the turn of the millennium NBA. If that guy had held up physically, what a physical specimen that guy was. But yeah, it's been quite an off season thus far. And again, all these moves yet to be made. So again, as we planned on, mid to later July, whenever it ends up being, we'll come back. We'll take kind of a broad view of the offseason. We'll throw in our thoughts more comprehensively post-draft on where that was. Thoughts on what we saw in the summer league while we were at it as well, from getting to see how that all shakes out. So we're still going to do the segment that we planned on. But, Ben, thank you so much for thinking of this one. This was a great idea to do this one to react to the very early part of free agency. And very happy with the recap we were able to do together. I appreciate it, my man.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick. All I have to say now, too, is death taxes and Mike Brown getting hired as an NBA head coach. It just keeps on going, no matter what. No matter every time we think it's not going to end, it's going to keep on going.
That's right. That's right. And the guy that helped him win Coach of the Year will now be a divisional rival with Jordy Fernandez. So that will be as one of them on his bench anymore. He'll be facing them every time they're facing the Brooklyn Nets from here on in. So, yeah, all that is worth keeping an eye on. We will continue to do so. But appreciate it, Ben. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1842.